They're all like that at Circuit. They're all that mature and... But we are jumping into a series on friendship. But before we do that, I just want to remind you that we have been in a series where we are looking at life as Jesus meant it to be. That's kind of our focus for this year. Could there be a way of living that's maybe different than standard, I suppose, that Jesus is inviting us into? And so we've looked at that, and we've made a commitment. If you were here way at the beginning of the year, we made a commitment that this year we are going to be committed to walking in God's grace and resting in his wisdom. I got that backwards. Resting in God's grace and walking in his wisdom. That fits a little bit better. But it's this slow and easy invitation to say, when we look at these things, you're not supposed to leave feeling weighed down by more burdens. Instead, you're supposed to feel invited to a better way of life. And this morning, we really see friendship as an extension of our community series, which we were just in. Because while community, it's similarly kind of marked by this relational love and support, a really important marker of community is that it's indiscriminate. What I mean is that anyone should be able to come into our community and be welcomed in, invited in. But we know that friendship works a little bit different than that. In fact, we see this in Jesus's life, that while he has, if you read the Gospels, these large groups of people that follow him, they're called crowds, then that's how they're referred to in the Gospel. I'm not like defining what a crowd is for you. You know that. Then he also has this closer number of 12 followers. We could see that kind of as his close friends. And they go places that the crowds don't. But then he also has this closer three within that group of 12, Peter, James, and John, that if you read the Gospels closely, you'll notice he takes to certain places he doesn't take the other nine. He tells things to the three that he doesn't tell to the other nine. And we could see this as maybe be like, if we're being cynical, as Jesus is kind of being exclusive, you know, of like, oh, he's only reserving some information, or we could just instead see this as practical, right? Because we know that we can only go so deep with a specific number of people, that our capacity as humans means we can only share life really, really closely with a small number of people. And so this morning, what I want you to consider is that you should care really deeply about what kind of friend you are. Maybe you don't spend a lot of time thinking about that, but that's what I want us to look at this morning. Because if we're honest, I don't think being a good friend is necessarily that high on our priority list. I think instead, maybe we feel lonely or a little bit relationally disconnected at times, but I think a lot of times our counter or our antidote to that is instead to, you know, jump into whatever level of entertainment can kind of distract us or get pulled into work or maybe spend a lot of times at like social obligations. We're so busy with our social calendars, but how much of that is actually spent with deep friendship? I even think really good things like marriage and families can inadvertently pull us away from understanding our need for friendship. I sum it up like this. I think that modern adult life, the way that we've all kind of had this unspoken of expectation of how adulthood should go, I don't think it prioritizes friendship. I don't think it does. But we have to ask ourselves, like, is that actually a good thing? Because I think it's possible to live like this. If you've got, you know, a healthy marriage, close extended family, if you're trying to raise young kids, I get why this would maybe fall down the list, but what happens when you don't have those things? Or what happens inevitably when those existing relationships get complicated and messy? What do we do then? And beyond just like the number of friendships we have, we also have to consider the quality of those friendships. It is one thing to have someone you call a friend. It is quite another to have a friendship as Jesus meant it to be. And so I wonder if when you consider your friendships, you would say yes to this question. Are you someone that guides your friends in their faith and their calling? Is this true of you as a friend? If it's not, that's totally fine, because that's exactly what we're going to teach you this morning. In fact, I want to talk to you about one of the most famous stories of friendship in the Bible. It's the story of David and Jonathan. And David is King David. He's one of the most controversial figures in the Bible because he's equally known for just really serious transgressions and a really serious commitment to God. But at this point, he's not king yet. This prophet or priest named Samuel, he has followed God's call and he's found David, and God says that's it, that's my next king. Except there's only one problem. There's a current king, his name's Saul, and he's not super psyched that another king has been chosen while he's still around. And what's more insulting is that this doesn't come from his family line, right? The king is supposed to go to your son and your son. At that time, they were all guys. It was kind of unfortunate. But David is this outsider, this no one that is picked for this kingship, and Saul is obviously not happy about that. But to make the Old Testament drama that much worse, Jonathan, David's really close friend, he's actually Saul's son. This man that's actually supposed to be in line for this throne, but isn't. And he has this friendship with David that's pretty special. In fact, I want to show you 1 Samuel 18, 1 through 4. After David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. From that day, Saul kept David with him and did not let him return home to his family. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David, along with his tunic and even his sword, his bow, and his belt. Let's just sit in that language that we just heard for a moment. I mean, this friendship is being described as being one in spirit, loving him as he loves himself. Think about the depth of this bond that's being communicated here. And frankly, I think it's a depth that's pretty foreign for us in the way that we understand our friendships. I don't know about you, but that's not the way I go around describing my friends. And what we could do is see this as maybe an archaic or outdated sort of language or type of relationship, or it could cause us to consider this. Could it be that we are actually settling for a lesser version of friendship? That just because this doesn't seem normal anymore doesn't mean that it's not better, that it's not closer to what Jesus intended it to be. So maybe, just maybe, could we be settling for a lesser version of friendship? And we actually see this commitment between David and Jonathan in the way that they make a covenant with each other. Covenants were incredibly common in the Old Testament world, both between people and people and God and people. And the best way to describe covenants is this: binding sacred promises. It's more than just I promise I'll see you next week or good intentions. This was the deepest level of commitment you can make to someone. And it was commonly marked by the exchanging of clothes. I'm glad we don't do this anymore. I don't think we need to bring that back. But if you're wondering why that's in the text and it feels weird, that's why. But we see this commitment, and actually what it should do is remind us of the commitment that God makes to us. You see, the entirety of the biblical narrative, it is set up, it is put into action by a series of covenants, these sacred promises that God makes with people like Moses and Abraham, where he says, I am committed to you as my people. I will not leave you. I will not forsake you. It doesn't matter what you do. And so we can understand, knowing that, the level of commitment that Jonathan and David have for one another, and that when they are making a covenant with each other, they are actually mirroring, it's such a hard word for me to say, the faithfulness of God to each other. And would we be willing to take our friendships as seriously as this? Because if we do, it will require us to be known on a deep level, which can be really scary, can it? I mean, I think most of us honestly don't even have a category for this type of relationship outside of marriage. That marriage is that relationship where we recognize kind of intimacy and vulnerability on a deep level. But marriage isn't the only space in which we are designed to be known on a deep level. And I get it, right? Vulnerability is a big struggle. In fact, it's kind of one of the things I'm particularly bad at. I'm very good at just projecting the image that I want everyone to see. And so a few years ago, I'm like, I gotta work on this. And I heard a quote a while back. I don't know, I didn't make it up, someone else did, but it said, not everyone has to know everything, but someone has to know everything. And that really resonated with me, and it was kind of like my guiding force as I was trying to be more vulnerable, to say, okay, I don't have to start sharing everything with everybody, but I gotta find someone that can know everything. And for me, that was my friend Julia. She used to live here. She lives in Arizona right now, but for the past 4 or 5 years, we have been having deep, intentional conversations with each other. And I can remember moments over the years where even though Julia is the safest person in the world to me, I was so scared to talk to her. I remember I had went on a date a few years ago. I'm not gonna give you any more details than that because you're not Julia. woo! But that happened, okay? And I have to tell her about some stuff. And I'm sitting across the table from her, and there is this like, there's this piece in my brain that's like, don't say this. You don't want to say this. You for sure don't want to share this. Because if she knew you like this, she probably won't love you this much. Like, it sounds so stupid, doesn't it? But isn't this what happens to our brain when we like are getting ready to expose ourselves, to share part of ourselves that we're not particularly proud of? And so I'm sitting across from her, and for a moment, it kind of feels like I'm going to die. That's the best way to describe it. I'm not physically in danger, but my brain is like, if you share this, you could just spontaneously combust. Like, I don't know. And then I took a deep breath because someone needed to know everything. And I started sharing with her. And the best way to describe how that felt was just so freeing. It was freeing. It felt so good to know that I wasn't hiding with someone that I knew loved me, and the fact that she could speak that back to me was so encouraging. Listen, I don't care who you are in this room. Most of you, that's probably not the thing that's vulnerable for you, especially if you've been married for like 30 years. But we've all got something, don't we? We've all got that one thing that we don't want to talk about. And that's the very thing that we should talk about. Because every single person in this room, you desire to be known on a deep level. You want to be known on a deep level. I love the way that C.S. Lewis says it. He says it like this: to be loved is to be vulnerable. So maybe I could say it like this: I think every person in this room wants to be loved. And how can you be truly loved if you are not truly known? I mean, it's hardwired into us. Do you remember learning in school Maslow's hierarchy of needs? It's like a pyramid. It's like the one intro to psychology thing everyone learns. And it's a pyramid of like what human beings need to like survive and thrive. And there's like 5 different levels. And the first 2 are obvious. It's like you need air and food and water and shelter, like super basic. And the very next one is love and belonging. It's the very next need of a human being. And you know what its categories are, right? Intimacy, friendship, and close family connections. Like this is maybe not something we do, but it is something we deeply need. In fact, in the garden, when Adam and Eve are in the garden with God, the second sin enters the world, when the world becomes not perfect anymore and everything breaks down, do you know the first thing Adam and Eve do? They hide. You see, we might convince ourselves that self-sufficiency is the ideal of the day. Our messed up brains might tell us that it is so much better to keep our like not so pretty stuff locked up. But that is not a marker of wholeness and health. It's actually a marker of a fallen, broken world. You were designed to be known. And so how can you be a friend that is vulnerable? How can you be someone that says, you know what? Somebody is going to know everything. And I wonder if we could just you know, consider some of these questions for ourselves, like this. How often do you share the highlight reel of your family with your friends instead of the thing that's been hard at home lately? When your friends ask you how you're doing, or you ask them, how often do you hear good, fine, tired, busy, instead of actually sharing the thing that you've been hoping for and are really excited about lately? Or maybe that one thing that as soon as everything gets quiet, it pops into your mind. How often do you avoid faith conversations with your friends, even though it's a really big part of your life? How often do you settle for those exact same sorts of answers from your friends as well? To be loved is to be known. To be loved is to be vulnerable. And that is friendship as Jesus has meant it to be. But I'm gonna let you off the hook for a moment. We're gonna jump back to Jonathan and David. You see, their friendship keeps going even though Saul is very sure now he wants to kill David. He's decided on that. And so they kind of have this back and forth thing. At one point, Jonathan goes to his dad, Saul, and they have this huge, big argument. And Saul, like, the Bible says he throws a spear at him to try to kill him. So if you feel bad about your dysfunctional family, just don't add spears to the middle of it, and I think you're gonna be fine. And then Jonathan, after the spear thing, is like, oh my gosh, I think my dad wants to kill my best friend. Like, I better warn him. And so he goes back to David, and this is what happens. He says this, go in peace, for we have sworn friendship with each other in the name of the Lord, saying the Lord is witness between you and me and between your descendants and my descendants forever. Then David left and Jonathan went back to the town. And this passage really got me thinking, like, after all of this drama between Saul and David and Jonathan, I'm like, what makes Jonathan so committed to David? Like, what is this? Because he's choosing David over his own father. Have you ever thought about that? And I'm like, why would Jonathan actually do that? At some point, like, shouldn't his loyalty to his family kind of supersede his friendship with David? And as I was looking at this passage, and I'm hearing Jonathan say, the Lord is witness between you and me, like, invoking the name of the Lord. And then again, earlier in verse 15, he says this, do not ever cut off your kindness from my family, not even when the Lord has cut off every one of your enemies from the face of the earth. Do you know what these passages tell me? That Jonathan is extremely confident that the Lord is with David. That maybe if we were to sit down and interview Jonathan, he'd be like, it would be so much simpler if the Lord had just chosen my dad to remain king and we could have rolled with that. But Jonathan is convinced. He's convinced that the Lord is with David, and he's right, isn't he? The Lord has chosen David. And that is the thing that keeps him committed and encouraging and doubling down on his words to David. The Lord is with you. The Lord is with you. Even when things look like they might go differently. You see, Jonathan knows where the Lord is working, and he consistently reminds David of it. Remember, while this is happening, David is literally on the run. He's like hanging out, hiding in caves from Saul. Because at this point in time, Saul's got all the power and all the armies and all the spears apparently, and David's got nothing. And so if we're betting on who's gonna come out of this thing victoriously, we're betting Saul all the way. But Jonathan says, no, I've seen where the Lord is working and I know how this is gonna end. Keep going. And listen, we hopefully won't find ourselves in a situation as extreme as that, but isn't that what we want? Don't you want to have a better picture of what the heck God is doing in your life? Don't you wish you had a better insight into how the Lord might be working? I think a lot of times we think, like, that means I just gotta spend more time with God and pray. And listen, the answer to that question, always gonna be yes. That's never a bad idea. But this also shows me, it teaches me that that's not the whole picture. That it's actually about getting other people in on it too, that can look at your life and say, I think I see God working here and here and here. In fact, it reminds me of a video I saw from a theologian named N.T. Wright. It was my first class of grad school, I saw this video and I thought it was awesome, so I've never forgotten it. And N.T. Wright's talking about discernment, and discernment's a fancy word for just how you figure out what God is doing. And he has this British accent, and Can I, just aside, I wish so deeply that I was able to do accents. Like, those of you that can, I'm just so impressed by you. But in his like British accent, he says, I think the key is this, to pray and to puzzle and to wait. He says, sometimes discernment from God, it can come like a lightning bolt. Like, whoa, this is what I'm supposed to do. He says, a lot of the time, it just looks like praying with God and looking at yourself. And then he says, inviting other people to kind of puzzle with you. Do you think this might be how the Lord is working? And you know what? I found that to be actually kind of how that works. Me and my friend, Hannah G, she's one of my roommates, and we kind of stumbled upon this accidentally because Hannah G is such a unique brand of human. Maybe you know someone like this. She is both an external processor and pretty quiet. So that means she wants to get her thoughts out, but she's never gonna like force them on you. In fact, she apologizes most of the time for talking to me. And I'm like, I'm your friend. This is kind of what we do. But what I figured out, I'll be like sitting on the couch working on my laptop and she'll sit next to me with like a book in hand and she'll like tell me about her day. She'll be like, today, she works in hazardous waste, which is like the coolest job ever. So she'll be like, today we cleaned up this crazy like explosion. But anyway, and I'll just go, cool, yeah. And then I'll wait and she'll say something else. Okay, and I'll wait and she'll say, and pretty soon she has just started talking and she's gotten down to like this deep, she's very smart, this deep like existential question about her life that she's wrestling through. And we have this joke about where I could get her to say anything without saying anything at all. And what I've learned, honestly, about discernment with her is that discernment and being a friend like this, it's not actually about having all the answers. It's actually just about being willing to go along the way with a friend and saying, I don't know either, but I'm gonna listen to you. I might ask you a question. I'm gonna invite the Holy Spirit into it. It's just being committed to walking with them on the journey that they are on. And if we wanna do this, like we gotta look ourselves in the mirror and go, our lives do not prioritize friendship. So if you wanna do this, you just gotta do it. You gotta carve out an hour of your week, whether that's on your commute home or an early morning walk or a coffee. It's your life, you get to decide. And say, I am going to, with time and intention, invest in this friendship. I'm gonna ask those deeper questions. And if you want a friendship on this level and you're not sure how to do it, the key is you just gotta go first. You want them to be vulnerable with you, you gotta be vulnerable with them. But I think over time, that's what draws us into friends as Jesus has meant to be. But I wanna take you one more time to David and Jonathan. We're gonna see how their story ends. What happens is while Saul's pursuing David, the Philistines, another nation, starts attacking Israel. And they've gotta kind of pause and battle that. And in that battle, Saul and his sons actually die in the battle. And so the last interaction we get between Samuel and Jonathan is actually as Samuel's mourning his friend's death. Oh, my dear brother, Jonathan, I'm crushed by your death. Your friendship was a miracle wonder, love far exceeding anything I've known or hoped to know. This is the friend of faith that we have the potential to become and maybe hope to find. We might settle for a lesser version. We might prioritize less than that, but that is not friendship as Jesus invites us to be. You might be sitting here kind of like me. When I write my own sermons, I kind of use a rule of thumb, like if I'm not convinced by it, you're for sure not convinced by it. And when I got to this point in the outline, I was like, well, the only problem is I'm a super inconsistent friend. Like I'm just not very consistently awesome at friendship. And so maybe you're thinking that and you're like, so how do we ever do this? And I was actually listening to a Tim Keller message and he's talking about friendship and he's like, so what might be the key to actually doing this? And he said, I think the key is friendship with God. And you might roll your eyes and be like, of course that's the answer, we're in a church. But I think it actually is. I'm convinced, pretty convinced of this. And he talks about that if you want to be friends with people, you should be friends with God. Because when you're friends with God, it does something to you. Like it slowly over time, it transforms you into a person of love. I don't know about you, but I think most people, they want to be friends with a person of love. And the best way that I can understand or describe friendship with God is actually what I think about when I think about God. And I'm going to actually invite you to do that this morning. So if you would, just close your eyes for me. And I want you to picture God, and don't get too tied up in the details. Like, whatever comes to your mind first is fine. But picture you're like sitting there with him. And I want you for a moment to think about like God's posture. Is he like far away? Is he close? Is he angry? Is he happy? Is he inviting? What is that posture like? And knowing that Jesus calls us friends, he literally says that in the scripture. He calls you a friend. If your picture of God is anything but what it would feel like to sit down with a friend who you haven't seen, an old friend, and that comfort, that familiarity, that love, then you gotta adjust it. So take a moment and do that mentally. And then I just want to sit here for a few moments. Don't worry about saying anything, but just take in what the character of God is, what it feels like to have that force of friendship directed to you, that's the way that God feels about you. And in fact, I want you to listen to these words as they're sung over you.
Closer, closer than my skin. You are in the air I'm breathing in. Here's where the dead things come back to living. I feel my heart beating again. Feels so good to know you are my friend.
You can open your eyes. I love those words because I think it describes God's posture to us, that he is so close, and that the feeling we should feel when we meet with him is that it is so good to know that you are a friend of God.